June 13th. Kate is coming for a visit this weekend, and she's bringing a boy. Okay, not a boy. I believe she'll be accompanied by a fully grown adult male, but she really did sound like a teenage girl when she called to ask if it was okay if she came for a visit and brought a friend. Of course, you and your friends are always welcome, I told her. But when you say a friend, do you mean a friend or some other kind of friend? I mean I'd like to bring Thomas, the man I've been dating for the last month. You're bringing him home after only dating a month? This must be serious. Kate giggled. She's 28 years old, and diary, she giggled like a teenager. We've been friends for a little over a year. We ride the same train to work in the morning, and we kept ending up in the same car. After a few months, we kind of became train buddies. You know, saying hi and then chatting about this and that. And then one day in May, we looked at each other and it was magic. I can't explain it, Mom. Maybe it was pollen, I suggested. Pollen really goes to people's heads sometimes. Funny old Mom, always with the joke, Kate chirped cheerfully. Nope, not pollen. It's a true romance. Well, that's great, honey. Tell me more about him. He's a sweetheart, for one thing, she began, and he's a poet, for another. Is that how he makes his living? I asked, a little tremor in my voice. Please, I prayed, not a poet. Kate laughed again. No, he works in commercial real estate. My sigh of relief was audible. That's an interesting combination. That's just Thomas, Kate replied. He's interesting and so cute. Oh, I can't wait for you and Daddy to meet him. I can't think of the last time Kate referred to Daryl as Daddy. High school, probably. Which, come to think of it, is the last time I recall her being this giddy about a guy. When she told us about Matthew, who she met in college and eventually married, she seemed happy, but not giddy. Is this giddiness a good sign or a bad sign? I guess I'll have a better idea this weekend. I haven't asked the most important question yet, I began, but Kate cut me off before I could finish. He loves quilts. He doesn't make quilts, but he's fascinated by them. His grandmother was a quilt maker. We might go down to G's Bend for the airing of the quilts in October. He sounds like a keeper, I said. I can't wait to meet him. Oh, you're going to love him, Mom. And before you say anything, I already told him we'd be sleeping in separate rooms per house rules. He completely understands. Actually, he's a little on the conservative side. That's fine, I said. So's your father, especially when it comes to sleeping arrangements. Today is Thursday, so I have 24 hours to clean up and figure out food. Kate and Thomas are flying up from Atlanta. Apparently, Thomas travels a lot for work and has more frequent flyer miles than he knows what to do with, and they should be here late tomorrow afternoon. Maybe Daryl can grill rosemary chicken tomorrow night, and on Saturday we could go to Parsnip, if I can get a reservation. Should I invite Sam and Jessica? They'd have to get a babysitter on short notice. Usually I'm their babysitter on short notice, but that won't work this time. Abby? Maybe? Well, I'll issue the invitation and leave the childcare question up to them. A boy. Katie's bringing home a boy. Wouldn't it be fun if he was the one? What kind of wedding would Kate want the second time around? Will they have children? How many? Two at least, I hope. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I promise to wait until after the visit before I start making quilts for my yet-to-be-born, might-never-happen grandchildren. Oh, but a woman can dream. June 16th. I spent a lot more time in my sewing room this weekend than I thought I would. Why? Because I was giving Thomas a secret quilting lessons. Diary, if Thomas isn't the one for Kate, he's still the one for me. The son-in-law I've always dreamed of. No offense to Matthew, who was a perfectly nice son-in-law for the short time he was in the family. Matthew was kind, polite, and dutiful. He sent thank you texts for birthday and Christmas presents, which may not sound like much, but most people never bother to acknowledge a gift at all these days. When he and Katie came for visits, Matthew helped clean up after meals and offered to take out the trash. He and Kate were old shoe comfortable together from the very beginning, and maybe that was the problem. It helps to have a crush on the man you marry, I think, to feel a little ooh-la-la when he walks through the door during that first year of dating. That head-over-heels thing fades, but if you're lucky, it will resurface now and again over the years and remind you why you married the guy in the first place. I love seeing Daryl from across the room at a party or at a store and thinking, oh, he's really cute. What a catch. Now, it's true. 5 minutes later, I might be complaining that if he wants milk, he needs to either put it on the shopping list or go pick it up himself. But those brief moments of appreciation help keep the motor of our marriage running smoothly. I'm not sure Kate and Matthew ever had that sort of romance, and maybe that's why their marriage didn't survive. So you can understand why it made me so happy when she and Thomas walked into the house just, well, shimmering in each other's company. They were laughing at something one or the other had said, and they had looks of such affection and happiness on their faces that you knew they were in love. I liked Thomas right away. He was charmingly awkward, the sort of tall man who tries to make himself appear a little shorter so as to not tower over everyone else in the room. He wore his dark hair neatly combed, but one piece kept flopping onto his forehead, and he was constantly pushing it back with his hand. Fashionable, but not too fashionable glasses, clean shaven, nice hands, clean nails. Overall, a sort of stylish preppy look. You could see how he'd look nice in a cardigan sweater. It was after dinner on Friday, the two of us alone in the kitchen washing dishes while Katie kept Daryl company as he cleaned the grill, that Thomas brought up the idea of me helping him make Kate a quilt. "I've watched my grandmother make quilts by hand," he told me as I passed him a glass to dry, "but I'm afraid I don't have that kind of time. My sister says she'll lend me her sewing machine. She went through a phase a few years ago of making her own clothes, but seems to have lost interest. So I've got her machine for as long as I want it. I'd appreciate any tips you could give me this weekend. I've watched a lot of YouTube videos over the last few weeks, but there's nothing like learning from an expert in person." "I'm not sure I'm an expert," I told him modestly and also truthfully. "But I guess I know what I'm doing, and I'd be glad to help. We just have to find the time." "I bet we can sneak in a few minutes here and there," Thomas said, giving the glass one last swipe with the dishcloth before putting it in the cabinet. "And maybe we could FaceTime if I run into any trouble when I'm back home." "I'll do whatever I can to help you," I told him. "As a matter of fact, why don't we sneak to my sewing room right now? The dishes can wait." Thus began our weekend of secret sewing. Thomas had already decided to make a pinwheel quilt, simple, easy, and cute, or, as he put it, aesthetically appealing. So the first thing we did was a few practice blocks, just so he could get the hang of piecing half-square triangles. Then he wanted me to help him pick fabrics online, but I told him to look through my very substantial stash first. I would have taken him to Thimble Pleasure's to fabric shop on Saturday morning, but I wasn't sure how he'd be able to get away, so my stash it was. "Don't even mention reimbursing me," I told him as I started pulling out fabrics for him to audition. "I'll never use half of this." I'm happy to report that Thomas made some lovely fabric choices. He really has a good eye. I showed him how to measure and cut using rulers, and I showed him how to press the seams. After that, he really didn't need much guidance. Oh, he acted like he did, pulling me aside over the course of the weekend to ask a question or to get me to check on his sewing, which he was sneaking off to do every time he had a spare 5 minutes. But he was clearly a natural-born quilter. Anyone could see it. Once Darryl was let in on Thomas's secret sewing, he did his best to keep Kate busy, which bought Thomas some extra time. By the time they were leaving on Sunday, he'd finished 6 blocks. This morning, I packed up the remaining fabric and took it to the post office to overnight it to him. We're going to FaceTime on Wednesday so I can check on his progress. After they left, Darryl and I sat on the back porch dissecting their visit over a glass of wine. "I am dangerously attached to Thomas already," I told Darryl. "I don't know what I'll do if they break up." Darryl nodded. "Same," he agreed. "He's a great guy, and he's got a great job, making real money, and he likes baseball." "And quilts," I added. "And his mother texted while he was here, and he texted back right away." "Right away?" Darryl shook his head like he couldn't believe it. "I'm telling you, Marnie, he's a keeper." "But does Katie know that?" I took a sip of wine before continuing. "She does, right?" "I'm pretty sure she does," Darryl said. "She certainly seems crazy about him. She seems a lot more in love than she did with Matthew." "Just wait until he gives her that quilt," I said. "That is going to seal the deal." "Well, she'll probably propose to him on the spot." We laughed and agreed that it was probably a little early for proposals. "Still, diary, between you and me, all I want for Christmas is for those two lovebirds to get engaged. That would be the best present I can think of, other than a Bernina 990. A Bernina 990 would be pretty sweet, you have to admit." June 26th. It's been a very busy week and a half since I last wrote. Mostly it's just been regular stuff. A meeting of the So Social Bee. Karen brought blueberry pie with berries from her own bushes. So good. A meeting of the Peacemakers Annual Quilt Show Committee. Somehow I got roped into doing that this year, as though I don't already have enough going on. And, most enjoyably, a tour of Florence Grangerfield's home with the other members of the Milton Falls Quilt Museum board. It feels very fancy to say that I'm on a board. Isn't being on a board a rich lady thing? The other day, Sheila asked if board members are expected to donate money for the building of the museum, since that's often an expectation of nonprofit board members. No one's asked me for money, and if they did, I would be happy to donate whatever my budget would allow for. But if they're expecting big bucks from Marnie Fetzer, they're out of luck. Orange Street, where the Florence Grangerfield home is located, is one of Milton Falls' quaintest streets, in my opinion. I've heard rumors that the oaks that line either side of the road are over 100 years old and will start dying off soon. But for now, they're standing tall and regal. Because of them, the yards on Orange Street don't get much direct sunlight, but people have compensated with beautiful shade gardens. Florence's house. Can I call her Florence? After today, I feel like I know her. Looks small and typical for its time. It was built in the late 1800s. But inside, it's decidedly spacious and modern. There's built-in shelving everywhere and beautiful dark hardwood floors and cabinetry. A few of the Oriental rugs are the originals. According to Florence's stepson, Leo Wyman, who was there today to give us a tour of the house. "Everything was always well maintained," Leo told us as he walked us through the first floor. Florence's housekeeper, Daisy, who was with us until the early 1940s, when she passed away, took especially good care of the rugs. She believed in making things last. She often got upset when Florence and my father brought home something new from their travels, a table or a sofa. I can still hear her now. "We have no need for a new table. The one we have hasn't lost its legs." I remember Grandmother Emmeline talking about Daisy, Darla said as Leo led us to the dining room where a sideboard had been set with coffee and cake. She said that Florence spent the first half of her life complaining about Daisy and the second half of her life mourning her loss. She never had another housekeeper after Daisy died. I think I'm right about that. Leo, correct me if I'm wrong. Leo confirmed Darla's memory of her great aunt. "I don't recall many people having household staff after the 1950s or so. Not like Daisy, someone who was really part of the family." As we drank our coffee and ate cake, Leo brought out copies of early Milton Falls Quilting Company catalogs and read some of Florence's letters. She wrote a letter for every issue that came out, and from the few that Leo read to us, I could tell she was a charming, thoughtful writer. "We should put together a collection of her letters," I declared. "We could sell it in the museum gift store. Assuming there will be a museum gift store." "Oh, I love that idea," Haley Wilde said. She turned to Leo. "Could we get copies of all the catalogs?" "Of course," he said. "They're available through the Internet Archive. I'll send you a link."
"Marvelous."
Haley turned her attention to me. "Since it's your idea, you should be the editor." "Oh, I wouldn't know what to do," I said. "I've never edited anything other than a faculty newsletter." "I'll do it with you," Haley said. "It'll be a fun project." Well, what could I do but say yes? How could I pass up a chance to work with Haley Wilde? Besides, I don't think there's much to it. At least Haley made it sound that way. I told Darryl about the project when I got home, and he started laughing. "You said no more boards, no more committees, no more projects, no more anything besides quilts." "Did I say that? I don't recall." Darryl laughed some more. "Well, once my studio is done, you can take over my study for your office." He pointed out the window. "Look at how much progress we made today. We're almost finished." I turned and looked. Darryl's studio was twice as big as I imagined it would be, and twice as, I don't know, fancy, I guess. I know he'll be happy out there. I just hope he won't be too happy. I hope he'll still want to come visit me every now and again. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.